Talking once again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy here for our weekly Tacky Talks. Hi, Tacky. How are you?
Hey, Joe. Happy Friday to you again. And always happy to be here. And it's finally getting warmer.
I know. It's really starting to feel like spring. And this will be the last weekend in March, actually. And this time we talk, it'll be April.
I know. We're definitely into the full year of the pandemic. I mean, we're now into the same period of time where the governor essentially shut down the whole state except for central services. And a difference a year makes. And unfortunately, I think people watching the news, even though we're reopening quite a bit, the counts are going up, especially among younger folks getting infected. But the hospitalizations are slowly going up too. But it's not as dramatic in the wintertime where it literally feel like it doubled inside of a week in hospitalizations. But it's a reminder that things are, still very tenuous. And despite the fact our older generation is getting vaccinated, as well as our essential workers and healthcare industry, and now we're moving on to other people with healthcare issues and other essential workers, we do have to remain vigilant. And again, I've been repeating this and you've been repeating this, the economy only goes as well as we behave.
Yeah, we do really hold our future, our destiny in our hands. So, keep masking, social distancing, sanitizing. That's all you can keep repeating, right?
Well, that pretty much basically sums it up. I mean, your favorite business owner you want to support, we want you to do this stuff in person and, invite your friends out to support your favorite businesses. But if people do not behave, that's going to be, I don't want to see another shutdown again, since we're so far deep into a reopening. A sudden reverse course will have a dramatic effect on the economy.
Yeah.
As psychologically, I don't think we're going to manage that on a psychological level. And unemployment rate is, not as bad as it was this time last year. I mean, it's not good, but there's signs of improvement.
Can we talk a little bit about the hearings that have been held at the virtual hearings, certainly, regarding the governor's vaccine rollout and the fact that it was completely different from what had been planned for many years?
Yeah, the after the SARS situation in 2003, I know SARS didn't have a serious impact in the United States. We had SARS, but it wasn't like the impact it had in Southeast Asia, where they also went through huge lockdowns and a lot of panic as they discovered a new disease that was really an epidemic in their case. They had money from the CDC to fund a SARS response plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when the swine flu came, I mean, this plan was readjusted. So, the Department of Public Health had this playbook in line for a SARS type or swine flu type infectious disease. Now, admittedly, COVID-19 is literally closing in on three times more infectious rate than the original SARS. SARS was not asymptomatic. SARS only affected you when you had symptoms. And, the other countries that had SARS rapidly closed their borders, rapidly, literally shut their economy down, rapidly shut down the whole economy to contain the virus to a point where after about a year and a half, it started to die off. There is still SARS, but it's very manageable now because of, frankly, drastic and draconian actions to respond in a close period of time. And it didn't get onto an airplane as much as COVID-19 did because of the asymptomatic matter of the disease. You go to foreign countries, they do temperature tests and infrared cameras looking at you all the time to check your temperature. It would not have picked up COVID-19.
Right.
So next time people visit a country, you see these IR cameras and people, asking you to step aside to take a temperature. I mean, for some reason, some people get offended by that, but that's the reason why they've experienced mass epidemics before. So, the question is, why didn't the governor's people dust off the old playbook, which includes things on how you manage the boards of health? What is the systematic shutdown? How do you do the protocols with hospitals? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccine is kind of a new situation, but you had enough of a framework to work off of. And, I think everyone agrees. I mean, the first 5 days of the crises, we didn't know what we were doing. And clearly they didn't know what they were doing either. And, it got me very scary. By day five-ish, they started writing themselves and was able to figure this out. But once again, my criticism's always been the sense that if you watch the news, and you see something bad going overseas and it's medically related and we fly there, it isn't a stretch. It's not going to show up here. And we knew since basically December, something was wrong.
Yep.
And we have nonstop flights to Asia. I mean, common sense would tell you something's going to happen. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm just being paranoid or I spend much time watching news media outside of our own country, because, you know, I think it's very important to get points of view other places, or maybe because I have more family experience regarding the matter, or the fact that you do recognize we're an international city, even though people don't really think of us as an international city.
Yeah. I mean, the governor blamed it on the fact that the vaccine needed the super cold storage. So he felt the best way to do it was the mass vaccination sites through this CIC health company, which I'm sure is making a profit off of this.
But the problem with that question becomes, I think we've spoken about this before, but this is more of a MEMA type situation where they should have been able to back at the beginning of the year, I don't know, do inventory of where the refrigerators are. I mean, I think everybody listening would think, oh yeah, that's like common sense. Yeah. If you're listening, you're thinking what I'm thinking. Shouldn't you, I don't know, have somebody call the hospital systems and the pharmacies and ask what your storage systems look like, and then start working out a plan from there about what makes sense? You know what I'm saying? Now to say, oh, we need to max vaccination locations. I get it, because we want to be able to provide large locations, relatively accessibility of large amounts of parking, but that means you have to move a lot of equipment into these vaccination centers either. Right. I'm fairly confident Robert Kraft does not have, you know, sub-degree refrigeration.
No, you know, you can keep your hot dogs in the regular fridge.
Yeah, I mean, exactly it. I mean, you know, whatever chicken nuggets they have.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's the thing that's kind of appalling. That they're trying to dance around the fact that something as common sense and fundamental is just taking inventory of what equipment we have that's needed based on the knowledge we already knew about storage of these first two types of vaccines.
Yeah,
that should have been pretty easy, especially with the incredible hospital network, biotech network, community hospital network, and private doctors groups. It should have been somewhat easily for them to figure it out, because already activated a massive network of people throughout the summertime, you know, to address it. And, you know, triage, unfortunately, if it got really bad, it would triage into places like community health centers.
Yep.
If the overflow is bad enough. I mean, Manatee Community Health Center was ready for tier two patients.
Yep. It was a big lesson learned, I think, for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, to us, this is common sense. And how governor can ignore a common sense thing is really kind of remarkable.
Yeah. And as you say, a little bit scary, too. Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and it seems to have flattened out and gotten to be much more efficient now.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of jokingly said it before, but it's not far from the truth. We already have people who do know how to do scheduling and massive amount of influx of people. I mean, the Boston Red Sox, the TD Bank, you know, Ticketmaster. You know, we do have industries here because of the nature of Boston that does know how to deal with massive influxes of scheduling, massive influxes of organization, massive influxes of infrastructure capacity to know how to organize stuff.
Yeah. Do you agree with the reopening phase that we're in now, Tacky?
I don't think I really agree with it in the end. I mean, I'm extremely hesitant, as you kind of say. Can you kind of hear, because of the fact that the infection rate issue is still out there. Vaccinations are still not anywhere close to herd immunity levels, or neighboring states are also not close to herd immunity levels. And again, it's up to us to behave well to keep the economy going.
Yeah.
So I think this is, I hate to say this, but everything feels like a test run, right? You don't know till you try. So, you know, unfortunately, as I said it earlier to this broadcast, if we do not behave, rolling backwards will have a dramatically worse effect than anything else, because we've already started running an economy. People have already started moving forward on trying to adjust to a new normal. So the risk here is that if he's forced to go back, even to one phase, it's going to create this massive like gear shift in the economy. It's like, you know, it's like you those who drive stick, you know, you don't clutch it correctly, you get that situation.
Yeah.
This is my fear. I know people may not like to hear this, But, you know, it's worse if you gear shift the other way and your clutch isn't right.
Yeah, it you know, economic and certainly emotional impact on people as well if that happens.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sun's coming out now, right? I mean, the winter was fairly calm for this area again this year. But it felt like a fairly short winter because it felt like we had like parts of the winter was actually somewhat nice for a day or two. Mm-hmm. So it kind of has that like weird psychological effect on us. And we think it was better than it was.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like last time, the weather's getting warmer. People are feeling the need for freedom. Don't get me wrong. I am absolutely in the same category as everyone else. And at the same time, though, you know, they think things are better because things are opening up.
Right.
And, you know, it's this kind of like interesting messaging where we're telling you mask up, hygiene, social distance, don't go meet people if you're ill. On the flip side, you know, we're saying it's safer to go outside.
Yeah.
But it's contingent on you. And the second half is the message kind of lost.
Yeah. It's a whole new world we're exploring one day at a time for sure. Can we
Florida is an example of that, right? They've already started to put the brakes on everything in the big cities in Florida.
Oh.
You know, and it's caused the gear shift problem I was saying earlier. I mean, the economy just kind of like and everybody's like a mess.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about another issue, Jackie, that's very important. Certainly, I know that you were part of a forum earlier this week put on by the district attorney's office regarding anti-Asian racism, violence, bigotry. And how did that go?
It went very well. I'd like to thank District Attorney Morrissey, Philip Chung from Grigio Resources, Peter Tilley, also from the DA's office, as well as Grace Lee, who used to be the civil rights ADA under both Bill Delahunt and Bill Keating, and David Traub organizing the whole event for the district attorney's office. You know, it was very well done. And we had also thank the police chiefs that were able to come up from Quincy and Brookline and other areas that have high density Asian populations. I thought it was a very thoughtful and important conversation piece where we provided some basic information about how things operate, but also me and Grace shared our stories a bit about our lives in different places. She grew up in LA and she's went through the LA riots. Mm. For some of you younger folks who only read this in history books, you know, there's a long history here, but I mean, Ali bubbled over the Rodney King incident and the just absolute destruction of Koreatown in LA. And it was largely done by the Black community, which was the neighbors. And a complete and lack of response of the LA police to try to create some calm, which left everyone to their own devices about how to protect themselves on both sides. So, you know, she has that traumatic, a very traumatic experience of watching literally a community being razed to the ground. And nobody really talks about that. The Koreans are still in some ways still rebuilding from that trauma. Mm. Now, I, on the other hand, lived in Quincy. And, you know, before there were any Asian Americans, it's like to put it, the city I didn't grow up in, because the city looks nothing like I grew up in. And there's a different aspect of total isolation where you are reminded you're not the same and you don't fit in. And, you know, there's a standard my parents have of me in the house, and there's a standard of me outside the house from the general public. And it's these kind of challenges a young person has all kinds of emotional impacts that does still become part of who I am as an adult. So it's interesting to provide two different aspects that, mm-hmm. that both me and Grace remind the audience that we understand we have lived what you are living. And both me and Grace have long memories about not just history, but also all the prior events we lived through, which I'm sorry to say, we are a short memory society regarding news. And we really need to remember what things were to remind ourselves, not because, you know, oh, it's happened again, it's the norm. It happened again, it shouldn't be the norm. So we took some really good questions from the audience, which I really appreciate these hard questions, both to the district attorney and the police chiefs and to Grace and myself regarding, you know, interaction with law enforcement, stories of actual incidents that happened in the county and outside the county that we received from some folks, which I know it's very hard, and you have to be, you know, there's a degree of courage to share pain. Okay, there's a degree of courage to share your pain. Really just call out people that didn't respond, and not in the mean kind of like you didn't fix my pothole way. I mean, in the like, look, I'm being assaulted here and you weren't there kind of way. So, and you're doing this with authority figures. And I think people take it for granted sometimes that, oh, well, you know, I live in Quincy, you know, I went to school with all these guys because, you know, it is Quincy. And, you know, there's not that kind of same authority mentality. But if you're isolated and you're alone, you know, the authority can be much scarier. And, you know, both me and Morrissey have always had the same attitude, is that, you know, we go out to people. The people, pre-pandemic, people see me out there and I will answer your questions. And sometimes you get mad at me because I didn't answer your question. I won't lie, it doesn't happen. But I mean, you know, we get feedback, and sometimes even I don't agree with you, I take that knowledge back to me with what I'm doing and keep that a part of my thought process as I go through and become part of building my life experience. You know, I kind of grow up with you, so to speak, as I learn from other people. You know, hopefully this is a good learning experience, not just for the audience, but also for myself and law enforcement to, you know, move forward on this anti-Asian issue. And, you know, and the video is up on YouTube. The district attorney website has it, the YouTube channel for District Attorney Morrissey. Make sure you type in the right district attorney, because more than one Norfolk County in the country. You gotta pick the right one, and you see Michael Morrissey's face, you clearly know we're in the right place. You know, I'll have the staff start moving that YouTube onto social media myself, so people can watch it. And if you want to skip the introductions, go straight to Q&A. It's about 35 minutes in. And we do that for about two-thirds of the conversation ish give or take 5 minutes, answering questions. I think that's the most important part of these kind of programs is taking questions.
Do you think, Tacky, that it's easier for young Asian Americans today in Quincy than it was when you were growing up?
What's sad is that learning from the Quarry, Quincy Asian Resources High School Forum we did back in this November, is that they are experiencing the same stuff I experienced more than 30 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I am getting old. And it's this kind of like frightful thing in my mentality, is that we have a much more open and diverse, and actually younger folks are very understanding about, more understanding, I won't say they always understand, but more understanding about being different.
Yeah.
There are still issues. For example, I'm fully aware there are, you know, how people who are new immigrants are treated regarding the challenge of their English skills versus people that aren't, including among different Asian children. I am aware there's still bullying going on. You know, we saw the incident this week at the high school regarding a pro-sexual assault statement. I mean, look, we're not perfect. This stuff still happens. But this is very different from, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, when there was not a lot of diversity. I mean, there was a very mentality that, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
For example, you know, homosexuality, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Now, transgender issues, the younger generation is more understanding transgender issues than the older generation, which has problems processing the issue. And they live with each other more than we ever did.
Okay, so the culture of silence is different then?
Oh, absolutely. It's very different. Yeah, but it doesn't say they're still not victims. It doesn't say they're still not peer pressure. Bullying has changed, right? Bullying is now on social media.
True.
The world knows, and it's out there, and no one knows anything else, and you can't present a counter-argument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Psychological effects are very different when we were kids, where it was a schoolyard issue. They chased you down. You know, I like to remind folks that, you know, I grew up on stick and stones don't break your bones. That's a term you don't hear anymore with like two generations now. And, you know, I was looking out for sticks and stones because literally that's what was coming at.
Mm-hmm.
Your words really wasn't a concern at the time when you see sticks and stones coming as a child. So that literally is what I was dealing with at that end of the spectrum. But now the sticks and stones is a whole different medium of social media. And as we learned from this past several years, words matter. And words can hurt. And words can lead to people being hurt.
Right.
So I was saying to one of my friends this week about this stuff, what you used to think is funny isn't funny anymore.
Yep. So it's
not political practice. I'm not talking. I'm not about being politically correct or censorship. You know, the words you say, you have to really think about what it means, because it's really having a real life impact on people's lives, and it's resulting in physical violence associated with it. That's the difference now.
Yeah.
Real big difference.
It's more than it sounds like it's more time for education than it is legislation.
You actually stated what we talked about on Tuesday night. Education is a huge component of this.
Yep.
I mean, all the different Asian ethnic groups, ranging from Vietnamese to Chinese to Nepalese, you know, to Japanese and Koreans and the Filipinos and many others, is not really part of our historical text. Mm-hmm. And, you know, definitely a minuscule part of my education at both Beechwood Know and St. Anne's. And, you know, I had to take a special Asian studies course at BC High, which was very unusual. They had a Chinese course, which we focused on, you know, Chinese history. And when we got to university at Brandeis, I was able to diversify my historical knowledge there on, you know, specialized topics in different classes. But you really need to get the people younger,
yes,
to really understand. And while we have the Lunar New Year and these kind of events, you know, there's a meaning behind these Lunar New Year too. It's not just a new year. You know, people see New Year as a change of a calendar. This is a cultural issue that has different cultural references for different parts of Asian countries who have different celebratory and stories behind the Lunar New Year. There's more to just this is the year turning, right? So, you know, the trials of Asian Americans. I mean, we always talk about, you know, I just talked about the LA riots. You know, we don't talk about Korematsu, which is a case law, which is still good, which, you know, can allow race-based internment camps for people to do nothing wrong.
Mm.
We don't talk about the psychological trauma of doing that. If you know, think about this, you're a U.S. citizen, you're second or third generation, you're born here, you know English, it's most likely your only and primary language, you've been stuck by the U.S. government, all your possessions taken away and treated, you know, if you ever look at the pictures, treated no better than animals. In internment camps, and you can't get him back to your home country because you are now a traitor because you're an American citizen.
And some of them were serving in the U.S. military.
Yes, and another whole story is they're one of the most decorated groups of folks who took the most dangerous missions, and not surprising, so did Black military took the most dangerous missions, and they were also assigned the most dangerous missions. And these folks actually fought mostly in the European theater because the fear that if you send them to Asian countries, they'll be traitors.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's that whole aspect of a race-based mentality about that we're now again the perpetual foreigners with loyalty only to our skin color, as opposed to sending our Germans, Italians, and Europeans to Europe, as opposed to sending to Japan. You know, it's like, dude, I mean, is this not a double standard?
Right.
Even though you'll have been here three, four, five generations.
Yeah.
So, and this mentality still continues today with the perpetual foreigners, right? I mean, our English is good, you know, compliments and things like that. Where do you really come from? You know, every Asian American's experienced this at some point, especially those who have been here. And, you know, and I'm proud of my heritage. I think everyone should be proud of their heritage. We're proud of, you know, where we come from and the rich cultures and beliefs. I do not exactly support, you know, I don't support any dictatorial government, but that isn't a reflection of our culture. It's like American culture. The American government doesn't dictate your culture. And America is a very complicated country of many different cultures around the U.S. There is a culture in every state and sometimes a culture in every city.
It's true. What would your advice be, Tacky, to the young Asian immigrants coming, you know, to this country today, experiencing these issues?
Well, my first thing is, you know, I've been there before, and I'm sorry to say it's not my first rodeo, so to speak, on seeing the same things happen again. So know that other people have experiences beyond you and beyond me. I mean, David Chu, everyone knows, runs the Dairy Queen at Washington Street, you know, was the first Chinese families. And they will tell you their experiences that many generations ago in the 50s and 60s, how it's different, you know, not different in some ways than now. You know, so, you know, first, you're not the first and you're not alone. And there's other people that can help you and guide you regarding these things. And I do understand that immigrant parents don't understand what is really happening. And I do understand that isolation has happened. Right. Secondly, I think it's very important to have conversations, you know, like we're doing here. Very honest, very candid. And someone, you know, I'm sorry, it's going to hurt somebody's feelings because they don't think it's true or they didn't understand. And that's important, too. We got to have these kind of conversations. And then, you know, get educated, right? You know, and educate others. You know, encourage things like, you know, Asian studies, for example. You know, encourage things like, you know, different clubs to let, you know, create more inclusiveness. I mean, we're always very happy when it comes to the August Moon Festivals and New Year's Festival, people willing to share, right? But we got to be able to really share not just our stories of our parents and, you know, our teachers, but also share stories among each other so you don't feel alone. And lastly, don't hate people. I mean, it's very easy to succumb to anger over this and you know, as part of grief. And I think the Asian community as a whole, and you know, and I think the mainstream community too, you know, the rest of us, we always call it mainstream because if it's not us, it's, you know, there's no other way to describe it, right? The rest of us, I didn't know how to describe this, right?
Of course, here in Quincy, it is the main community.
Yeah, it is in some ways. You know, don't let the grief overwhelm you. I mean, Definitely grieve, but you know, don't let it overwhelm you. And I hate to say this to kids because it makes me sound old. Change will come. Just be patient. And if you don't believe change will come, you don't have to go further than looking at me.
That's right. Or Nina Liang or Ian Kane or a number of other now at mayor of Boston. So sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Change will come. It's just going to take some time. And I promise you, your change will be much more advanced, more accomplished than any change I will ever do.
Good point to leave it and ask you to give out your contact information if you could.
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. We're still operating remotely under COVID protocols. Hit any staff person. Just pick a number. We will get the message and we'll get back to you. My staff will get back to you. I'll get back to you. You can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I'll filter through the emails. Again, I always remind folks, I prioritize people who are having immediate emergencies first. I do see your thank you. I thank everyone for people who thank me for voting for the global warming bill. I did vote for the freezing of unemployment tax. Thank you very much for emailing me and I really do appreciate you thanking and touch base with me on and letting me know that, that I was being helpful. I mean, I always would never turn down some appreciation from my constituents for my work, not asked or needed, but I do very much appreciate the thought. My Facebook, Tacky Chan, State Representative Facebook, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, is a public Facebook. You do not need to be a member of Facebook to access it. We put a lot of graphics and other links up there that can be helpful before you have to call me, and obviously tackychan.org, another place we is a repository of information we put in for people to, before you actually have to call me, hopefully maybe you find some information there. So, like I said, we have no shortage of ways to try and find us, so to speak. But nothing's better than a phone call or an email. Please do not use social media to reach out to me. I try to explain to a friend that when you have 6 different text messaging items, I'm up to like 7 different video conferencing softwares. I don't think other people have this
information overload at that time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm confident other people do not have this type of communication challenge.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Tacky. Great to talk to you.
It's good to see you, Joe. I will see you again next week.
All right. And it'll be April.
Yeah, thankfully after April Fool's Day.
So. That's right. Right.
Maybe only one of us actually shows up next time.
We'll see who the joke is on, right?
Exactly.
All right. Thanks again.
Take care.